Las opiniones expresadas a continuación son única y exclusivamente responsabilidad de los invitados y no comprometen a Radio UNAD Virtual.
Bienvenidos a Escucharte Radio.
Espacio radial del programa de música de la UNAD.
Aquí encontrarás grandes compositores, historia de la música, análisis, producción musical y mucho más.
Solo acá, por RV Radio, para la audiencia global en línea.
Dirige Alexander Amézquita.
Saludo cordial para todos los oyentes de RV Radio, Radio UNAD Virtual. Este es Escucharte Radio, espacio radial del programa de música de la Escuela de Ciencias Sociales, Artes y Humanidades de la UNAD. Hoy, como siempre, un nuevo episodio, una nueva historia por contar. Y bueno, hoy tenemos un invitado. Siempre son especiales, pero hoy tenemos un invitado diferente, podemos decirlo así. Porque de los 167 programas que ya llevamos aquí en Escucharte Radio, es el primero que vamos a hacer en inglés. Ya entramos en el tema de la internacionalización. Y para ello tengo dos invitados. Una, estudiante del programa de música La UNAD, Mariana Pérez Mejía. Mariana, bienvenida a Escucharte Radio.
Alexander, muchas gracias. Buenas tardes a ti y al maestro Julián.
Y tenemos al maestro Julián Pernet Castilla, él es nuestro invitado, así que pues hago el saludo. Maestro Julián, welcome to Escucharte Radio.
Hello, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Julián, it's a pleasure to have you here with us today. Thank you for joining us. Let's start with a few questions about your life and music beginnings. So you grew up in a home full of music and dance. What memories from your childhood made you want to become a musician?
Very directly, it has to be the dancing. What I remember the most in my early childhood was dancing with the adults in their parties. So if there were like a number of parties at the end of the year, I was consistently going late at night with them and dancing with them. There were no other kids around, and I was like 4 or 5 years old, and they were dancing to music, and I would be staying up with them until, you know, 2-3 in the morning, just because that's the environment I wanted to be. I didn't know it meant that I wanted to do music, but just the energy of it kept me curious, and I think that's one of the most driving factors of how I decide to become a musician, is that influence of repeated dances around me in my home.
Awesome, thank you. So your brother was very important in your early music life. How did he influence the way you understood and enjoy music?
We're very close in age, but when we were kids and all the way into the late teenage years, three or four years of difference are like a whole lifetime. So in the beginning, he was the first one doing everything. He was the first one doing like swimming lessons and the first one doing music lessons too. So I remember I was probably around 4 years old, maybe a little younger. He would come back home from his lessons on keyboard and he would show me what songs he learned and what sorts of sounds the keyboard could make. And so he was constantly exposing me to it just by virtue of sharing stuff with me, like you know, you share things with your best friend.
Okay, thank you. So you moved from Afro-Latin percussion to classical piano when you were about 15. What made you change instruments, and how do you remember your first experiences with the piano?
Oof. I haven't thought of this at all, ever. I think my first experiences with the piano come from what my brother was doing. I would imitate a lot of the times what he was doing in his lessons. And sometimes he would make me play other things that he could play on top of. And a lot of those times it wouldn't be playing piano at all. It would be playing percussion or singing or doing something else. So I wasn't particularly looking to become a pianist when I knew I wanted to do music. I was just looking to be a musician or be in a position where I could think musically and creatively. It so happened that the piano was the thing that developed my dexterity throughout all of those years up until I was 15, more or less. And I felt confident enough to continue on that path, thinking that maybe a little lazy of my part too, that another instrument from scratch would be too much work. So I might as well just stay at the piano and continue on that path. But of course, when I started going serious into it, I discovered a passion that to this day fuels me on a day-to-day basis, even though today I don't really consider myself a pianist.
Okay, Julian, great. So when you moved to the United States in 2015, everything changed, your environment and the music around you. What personal and musical lessons did that experience give you?
First, the ability of having like globalized tolerance and just spirit of coexistence. I think the more we travel and the more we live in different places, the more we realize everyone goes through the same things everywhere. And whatever the fame of this new place that we're supposed to live in is, that doesn't mean we're going to have that same experience. And that doesn't mean that people in that other place have that experience. So I think it opened my mind the most to the fact that the only barrier that we have with one another is language. And after that, culture might be another one, but these things can be learned and unlearned. So, you know, that's how we learn to be more accepting of each other and to coexist better in the world. I think that's the biggest lesson I've had in the time I've been out of Colombia. But on arrival, the impact was that I was immediately in a place with less happening than I was used to, artistically speaking, but with a lot to dig in terms of cultural exposure. Of all places, I arrived to Mississippi when I first entered the United States. And it's not, you know, it's not a jet set place to choose to migrate, because everyone, myself included, wants to be in New York, because that's where you can make something explode if you have any artistic talent. However, there are things hidden in plain sight in a place like Mississippi that make it the cornerstone of music and art in the United States, even though people in here don't necessarily celebrate that. So that was another huge lesson that I learned as soon as I got to start a life in the United States, was that people don't celebrate the real richness of their culture here. They're celebrating other things, you know, fashion, entertainment, Hollywood, scandals, politics, but not necessarily their own music and their own foods and their own really transcendental cultural objects, so to speak.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Mm-hmm. So now I will ask you some questions about your work and career. Your music mixes many styles, classical, jazz, Afro-Caribbean, rock, and fusion. How do you see this mix, and what do you try to express with it?
Mainly we are what we eat. I mean this in a verbal way, meaning the way I speak and what vocabulary I use is very much influenced by what I've read and what sort of speaking I listen to. The same happens with music. What I compose or arrange or create musically is influenced by everything I am listening to constantly. And this rotation is very diverse. I'm not enclosed in one style of music particularly. Mainly because it bores me after a while, just staying within one kind of aesthetic. I like things from all over the world. So at the moment of creating something, if I feel like I want to change the dialect of my musical vocabulary, I will in the middle of a song. And it doesn't always necessarily sound like an incoherent discourse. A lot of the times you can create a whole mixture of styles and aesthetics and, musical disciplines and systems of harmony and a lot of stuff. And it can still sound like a self-sustaining piece of music and something that has a lot of cohesion and coherence to it. So I think that every time I put myself into the exercise of creating, the considerations are, who is it going to be playing this with me? Where am I going to be performing it or recording it? And also, what is the frame that I want to make for the piece? Where do I want it to exist? Is it something that should be called a rock song or a piece of classical music? Or is this a pop song? Or is this a salsa song? Because if I can decide that beforehand, it probably helps me keep my focus until I finish the piece, because it's very easy to let things unfinished and just start new ones every time. I don't know if that answers the question.
Yes, awesome. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so in 2023, you went on a tour and recorded in São Paulo with musicians from different countries. Why was that project special for you, and how did it help your artistic growth?
São Paulo was a project that was born out of the friendship that we established in Mississippi around this time, like 10 years and a couple of months ago, with the people that I met as soon as I arrived. There are three musicians in particular, myself included, that met at the same time in Mississippi. That's Vincent D'Elia from Brazil and Alex Ocon from Honduras. We arrived to the same city, the same year, I think the same month too. And so after 5 or 6 years of just having a life there, we found ourselves working together and putting original music together. Then we started parting ways. Vincent got an opportunity to study at the Paris Conservatory, and Alex moved to Tampa first, and I stayed in Mississippi for a year and a half more, I think. But then we got like a calling again to put something together. We wanted to keep producing music, but now this time it was about doing a residence. We were about to meet somewhere, live in a place together, and just cook the music from there. Make it a consequence of our living experiences together, not just of the studio work, but of us spending time together, cooking together, and just getting to know each other at a deeper level by coexisting like that. So it's a project that wants to renew that friendship that was born in Mississippi. Now it's migrating to Brazil. Now it includes in its network people from all over Europe and other Latin American places. And nowadays we're all in different cities of the world, but given the right circumstances and resources, we will get together to produce more works and fly to a location and make it happen here. I think at least three times we've done it ever since we've parted ways. And that's what made that project so special, is that we had the chance of recreating our culture and community that we built in the United States as Latin Americans, but we took it back home to Brazil and São Paulo and a different cultural setting.
Okay, thank you. So you talk about free practice, creating freely without worrying about the market. How does this idea appear in the way you compose, perform, and make decisions in your career?
I will say that as a philosophy, all I have access to on a daily basis is the logical understanding of the philosophy, but to apply it on a daily basis and to apply it to every performance, I think is going to be something that takes more time, more years down the line. I don't know if it will ever happen in my lifetime, but the idea is that if I keep that as my artistic ethics, so to speak, then it means that every decision I make about my music or anything I create in art is a creative decision and not a business decision or an entertainment decision or a financial decision or a political decision or any other decision than a musical creative one, so as to keep that realm sacred, because a lot of the times to live as an artist, to continue to do this on a daily basis, you have to be incredibly stubborn with the value that your surroundings are telling you you have. So you have to always be answering back, what is the real value that you have, in your own words. And I think that the idea that your praxis, this thing that you exercise every time you exist as a musician, you keep that sacred. That means that no matter how much you sell out, or no matter how much you participate of a music industry and the commercialization of music, you can still keep your center and keep making music because of what it brings to you, humanly speaking, not just financially and all these other aspects. So I think that at the moment of making music, the first question I ask myself is, do I want to do this? Legitimately, do I want to take part of this, and is it necessary for me to say something in this kind of setting? Can I use my voice in this setting? And if the answer is yes, I will probably embark onto it. Whether it leads to something or not, just the sheer interest of doing something new will keep me engaged and curious about a new project. But if I cannot answer the question of whether or not I want to do this, I'm probably not operating within the free praxis that I would like to.
That's right. I totally understand you.
Mm-hmm.
So what new projects or collaborations are you excited about right now?
Oh, there's a lot in the oven. Some things are planned to be released soon, but a lot of it is in my hands, like the advertisement, the post-production and the distribution of it falls in my hands. So it's a lot of hats to wear. I think that in the next year and a half, I would be probably releasing everything. One of these projects is I created a new band with which we want to suggest a comeback to rock music in the most crude terms possible, meaning that music like jazz, salsa, and rock has been removed the libertary element from it. The spirit of freedom seeking that the music had has been removed, and today it exists as something else very far removed from the original intent. So we wanted to make music that, you know, if I hear it, I'm going to think it's rock and it has that thing that classic rock used to have, which is you hear it and immediately you understand that it's a statement of assertiveness. There's no doubts, there's no shyness, and there's no perfection to the rock expression. So that's one of the projects. It includes around an hour and a half of music, where maybe 30 minutes of it are free improvisations of many kinds of style. You know, there's something in trying to do like an Indian chromatic style. There's another one that wants to be like a Middle Eastern kind of flute piece. Something else wants to be like a free jazz piece. And there's like a trap parody, you know, in the times where Bad Bunny is the most famous person in the planet. Well, why not do something kind of alluding to the style and the things he's invented, so to speak, like the kind of singing and all of that. And as a counterpart to that project, the other half of the album is all pop songs. So one in the style of Stevie Wonder, one in the style of, you know, the Toy Story soundtrack. Just little things that will be heard as pop music, but they are recontextualized into something that you don't know what to call exactly. That project is really, really big. I'm expecting to work on this in the next year and a half, like I said. And in December, something else that I'm about to start is we're going to record some original music in immersive audio in a Dolby Atmos studio here in the United States is the possibility of recording something that will be mixed in immersive audio. So what that means is that you're not limited to the spectrum of left and right, like I'm doing right now, you know, like you're probably doing right now. What that means is that you can find a space of 360, a dimension of a 360 space in which you can freely accommodate any sound you want. And that, to summarize it, when you listen to something mixed in immersive audio, it doesn't feel like you're using headphones or that you're listening to something come out of a speaker. It sounds like you're there with the music and it's just sounding around you. It's a very, to me, it's a very new thing, and I'm stepping in to learn more about it. I have like 3 weeks to learn more before we go into the studio. But I think between those two things, I'm busy for the next year and a half. And that's without counting the performance projects. That's just what I record and I do at the studio.
Okay, so my best wishes to that new band projects and future plans.
Thank you, Mariana.
So now we are going to take a short break, okay?
Cibersofía, un programa de educación, cultura, pedagogía, filosofía y algo más. Cibersofía, escúchenos todos los viernes a las 10 de la mañana por Radio UNAD Virtual y desde allí para Colombia, Latinoamérica y el mundo.
Okay, Julian, so now I will ask you some questions about teaching music online. You believe in the right guidance at the right moment. How do you apply that idea when you teach remotely?
I'm not exactly sure it's possible to work with that idea in mind. Meaning that I think you have to be able to compromise from the beginning that when you're teaching online and remotely, you're teaching a group of things and another group of things is left as a gap, because these are the things that, the student learns from being with you in person. So I think I've never intended to replace the experience of teaching in person and having the most ideal conditions possible for the student when I teach online. But you can read the environment of the person and you can learn about their learning personality through a phone call like we're doing right now. That is possible. That much is possible. You can learn about what they react to, what sort of frustrations they usually have when they encounter something new. All of this transfers in a video call. But there are other things like posture, habits, and just the general presence of the student-learner relationship is really not something that happens online. But I think ideally, a person that is self-taught and wants to embark onto anything in music, if they want to do remote lessons online, that's one component of it. That's just a part of what they can learn, and they should have another experience, musically speaking, in person, meaning that everything they learn cannot come from remote settings. It's not possible. That would render a very strange kind of musician that somehow knows everything but is not able to do anything themselves.
Okay, Julian, thank you. Mm-hmm. So you teach piano, production, music, appreciation, and rhythm theory remotely. What challenges have you found and what strategies have you worked or have worked best for you?
I think objectively speaking, the first challenge is having a good interface, meaning if I'm sharing a screen or something, what is it that you're seeing and how do you understand what I'm explaining through what I'm showing you in the screen? That's very important because without a proper visual interface, your student is just looking at the screen that they look when they watch Netflix, when they watch YouTube, when they upload their own stuff to social media. It's the same screen. It looks the same. It has the same colors. And if anything, you look less attractive to them than what they usually look in the screen. So you need to make sure that the interface you're using is interesting enough and clear enough so that they have no question as to what they're looking at. So when I teach a keyboard, I have to make sure that they can see my face and that they can see my hands from a top view perspective, because without that, they cannot tell what I'm playing. And then if I want to highlight something or do a theory lesson and use a whiteboard, I have to make sure that I'm not buffering my thoughts onto the whiteboard, but rather that what I write there is going to be what they're going to understand. So the most important thing, I believe, is the visual interface. It doesn't compensate for not being equipped as an educator, but you will lose a student if your visual interface is not interesting or is not clear enough for the student. You will lose them. They will feel like they're not learning anything. So number one is going to be the visual interface. Number two is going to be the, you know, do you have a latency problem with your audio, or are you playing an instrument that doesn't transfer very well on a video call? Because, you know, I can teach piano online, but can someone teach oboe online? And I'm sure that that's going to be a very difficult problem. My wife teaches violoncello online, and is kind of a challenge to tell when someone is playing something with proper technique or proper intonation. It's kind of a guessing game. And you learn to read and guess your students, but there's always a 50-50 chance that the video call is making you listen to something that is not actually happening. So visual interface and your hardware, software, and just digital environment. What is it that you're using for a video call, for a camera, for a microphone, for sharing the screen? All of these are extremely, extremely important. You could say as important as the pedagogy itself when you're teaching online, because your pedagogical approach kind of dictates how your interface looks and how you choose your devices and all of that. So it's a whole different job than just teaching. You have to kind of become a technician too of the digital environment.
You're totally right. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Keeping students motivated online can be difficult. How do you build a connection and keep them engaged?
I am very black and white. You know, I just go and ask them, what do you want to play? What music do you like? What would you like to experience? You know, what do you see yourself playing at the piano? What songs do you hear that you're so curious about? You cannot help yourself but learning different things from it, the melody, the lyrics. And that tells me a little bit what they want from lessons with me. Because online, very few students want you to teach them. They just want to learn something already. And anyone that can teach them that, they will learn from. But it's different when you have an in-person student. A lot of the times, they will find you because they want to learn from you. So no matter how you do your lessons, they're there to take what they can from it. But an online student is there to learn how to play the, you know, level 2 music for the Zelda game. And so you have to teach them that. And if you don't teach them that, they will find another teacher that will teach them that. And that's the main difference between teaching in person and teaching online, is that you have less of a negotiating power in what materials are learned. But at the same time, if you are sensitive enough to your students, they will tell you every lesson what they're looking for.
Okay, thank you. So what advice would you give to someone who wants to study music online but feels nervous about the technology or about not being in person?
Someone that wants to teach or learn?
Wants to study. Wants to learn.
To learn. I have very different kinds of advice. Some advice is on behalf of themselves as learners, and some advice is on behalf of themselves as clients. So, and I've learned this through working for at least 2 companies where you are provided the students, and they take a cut because they provide the students. And so this is what I have as a suggestion. If you have the curiosity to learn something, and there's no one around you in person, meaning you couldn't find anyone in your community that could teach you what you're trying to learn, okay, jump onto YouTube and try YouTube. If YouTube doesn't cut it, if you still, maybe you get somewhere through YouTube, but it still feels like it's too hard for you, or that you're having too much of a trouble understanding what people are saying in YouTube. So they're not talking to you, they're talking to everyone in the internet. Then find an online professor. And when you look for an online professor, be careful of credentials, because credentials have become way too common in the world of art education, meaning anyone can take a degree from any university so long as they pay the fees to get that degree. Now, this is not to take away from the people that actually put an effort into working a degree, but what I'm saying is that not because someone has a degree or the credentials means they know how to teach, or that they know how to teach 8-year-olds, or that they know how to teach 60-year-olds. And at the same time, someone that is very proficient at their instrument and virtuosic and a world-class concert performer, the fact that they're good at their instrument doesn't mean that they're good at teaching the instrument. Most learners get confused by that because the person has the credentials and is also respected in their world for what they do. So it must mean that they also teach very good, and it's not the case. Almost always that person doesn't know how to teach, doesn't like it, and hasn't ever thought of doing it. So when you find a teacher, you have to make sure that it's someone that already sounds like someone you want to be around with, someone you want to have a conversation with, someone you are curious about. You have to make sure that you see them doing something you want to do yourself. I want to play like this. I want to sound like this. I want to compose like that. I want to produce like this. When you have that in mind, then the search for an online teacher is not as difficult, because you will feel when you find the right person. And even when it's a good lead and you have a lesson the first time, then you find out it's not the right teacher for you. You learned something, but they're not taking you at the rhythm you want. So try another one and try different professors until you find someone that you click with. It might take a long time, because online, everyone looks good and professional and serious, but it's not until the third or fourth lesson that you realize if it's actually going somewhere or not. So as long as you know these things before you start your search for an online teacher of anything, this is for music and like mechanics and electronics and anything. It's just what I found it means to teach somebody through a screen. If you know these things beforehand, you will have a better eye for the right teacher.
Thank you, Julian.
Mm-hmm.
Julian, it was a pleasure to meet you, learn from you and about your work. Thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you very much. It is my pleasure. I'm very happy to hear back from you. And anytime you guys want to have a conversation, I'm here.
Thank you. So now we are going to listen to one of your pieces.